You're listening to the Kids Ministry Collective Podcast. Each episode of the KMC is designed to inform, encourage, and entertain those who love kids and serving kids ministry. We hope you'll enjoy today's podcast and maybe even learn a thing or two. Now let's join our team for this episode of the KMC. Welcome to another episode of the Kid Ministry Collective Podcast. My name is Tom Bump, and I'm your host. Looking forward to another great episode as we try to give you ideas and thoughts that will help you and challenge you in your ministry. I'm excited to have Jason and John back on. Jason Tilley and John Tillman, they've been guests before. But we've been having some discussions offline and felt like we needed to bring this online. And so we're going to start a series. You're going to hear these pretty much about once a month, maybe a little more often. We'll see how it goes. But we wanted to think about the idea of helping leaders create spiritual development plans and how to really, truly make sure we're winning, to use the buzzword for the day, of helping people really develop spiritually. If we're truly there to make disciples in the church, we need to be about and have a plan to do it. And so, you know, today there seems to be a struggle in kid ministry circles when it comes to the role of children's ministry leaders. And that struggle is, do I lead kids? Do I teach parents to lead kids? There's that struggle of, do I do both? Do I do one or the other? How do I split my time? Do I split my time? You've got a lot of leaders frustrated because they feel like parents don't care or don't want to disciple their children. You've got parents on the other side feeling frustrated because they're not getting a plan from kid ministry leaders. So, John and Jason, we've been talking about this thing and this topic for a little while, and I feel like it's so important that, like I said, we had to record this. So, guys, welcome to the show, first of all. I kind of just jumped right in, but that's because I'm really excited about this topic. Jason, first, introduce yourself a little bit. John, introduce yourself, and then let's dive into this topic of what can we do to help ministers when it comes to development plans.
I'm Jason Tilley, and John and I are in a part of an organization called Ministry Accelerator, where basically we study cultures and trends and technology and techniques and different ways to bring about sustainable ministry in the lives of people. And basically, we're taking the timeless truths of the gospel and the scriptures and making the and helping churches find ways to make them relevant in their culture. And so that's what we do. I've been doing ministry for about almost 20 years now. Well, longer than that when I count, you know, when I was in college. But youth ministry, a long stint in children's ministry of nearly 20 years, and creative ministry. And so that's kind of where our background's coming from. And we were just looking at, one of the things we've been looking at lately is where people are with plans.
Cool. John, tell a little bit about yourself too, and then we're going to dive in on this.
Great. Sure. Well, my name's John Tillman, and like Jason said, I work with him in Ministry Accelerator, and I also run my own nonprofit blog site that's for spiritual development. It's a Monday through Friday blog called The Park Forum that people subscribe to for, you know, it has a reflection and a reading plan that we read through the scripture every 2 years, and so that's one of the things I'm actively involved in now. I'm also a writer. I've been writing for a long time for like a million different types of things. You know, one of the things I worked on with Jason for a long time was the Elevate curriculum that me and a writing partner were the writing. We led the writing team for Elevate and did a lot of other production type stuff as well. We worked with Jason there. And then, you know, now we're looking at ministry, like he said, with kind of a looking at data, looking at trends, looking at what's changing, trying to just figure out, okay, it doesn't matter what we've been doing, what's working, and how can we help more people to you know, make those changes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I so appreciate you guys, because one of the things that, like I said, we've been talking about offline, and that's why I felt like, you know, I agreed we needed to put this on air and record some of these talks, because I think a lot of leaders are struggling. I don't honestly care what size church you're in. I've been in and I've led ministries as small as, you know, in a church of 100 or less. Now I'm in a church that's a multi-site that reaches 5,000 plus. I'm in a campus that's only about 400 people. And I've sensed this tension, and I, like I said, I've been in ministry for 30 years now. And there's this tension in the circles, and you see it in a lot of Facebook discussion groups. You hear this discussion going on at conferences, that a lot of leaders are struggling with this, because we know, you know, we see the data of people walking away from the church. We see it, and we're like, what can we do about it? And there are times where I think we're measuring the wrong things. We're looking at the wrong things. Maybe we're not even asking exactly the right questions. And so I think one of the places to start is to ask, what's our plan? And so that's why I wanted to talk about this topic today, is why is it that kid ministry leaders are frustrated, and why is it that parents are frustrated? I mean, do you guys see that frustration as something that ministers are struggling with right now? John?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. You know, we did a survey in 2016, the State of Children's Ministry survey, and you know, only 4% of ministers who responded to that survey believe that the parents in their ministry were intentionally discipling their kids. You know, so we surveyed all these children's ministers, and when they think about, well, are my parents actually intentionally discipling their kids? Only 4% thought that that was true, and I mean, that's a just, you know, that's a discouraging number. Of course, yeah. Everybody who would, if you're feeling that, you know, that's frustrating.
Right. Right. So, you know, here's the thing I'm wondering about then. So why don't parents have a plan? You know, if that's one of the things that leaders are struggling with, why don't they have a plan?
Well, this may sound a little harsh, but I think parents don't have a plan because we don't have a plan.
Oh,
we as children.
Say that one more time. Say that one more time.
I think that parents don't have a plan for discipling their kids, in part because we as children's ministry leaders don't have a plan. And we've been modeling not having a plan for spiritual development for a long time.
Wow.
So it's like that old commercial, I learned it by watching you, Dad. That's exactly where parents are right now. Also from our survey. From that same survey, 45.9% of children's ministers responded on a survey that they did not have a plan for spiritual development of the kids in their ministry. So they didn't have a plan laid out of, like, how are these children going to develop and learn? However, on that same survey, 100% of respondents said that they believed that the children who left their ministry had a strong biblical and theological background. Those two responses don't make any sense.
Hmm.
You know, that 100% is made up of 39.5, almost 40% of people who completely agreed that, yes, everyone who comes through my ministry has a strong biblical theological background, and 60% somewhat agreed.
Mm-hmm.
But only just barely half of them actually had a plan to make that happen. You know, so... You know, and as an evangelical, as a Protestant, we don't think about the early church and church fathers and things that much. But I think the early church would be shocked that there are 45% of children's ministers who don't have a plan for spiritual development, because the early church, they had a plan. And one of the things that's been kind of revealing for me, you know, in the past 5 years or so, is learning and kind of studying more about the liturgical year. You know, sort of liturgical churches use, and they follow the system through the year where they study certain things at certain times. And like the most that I ever knew about liturgical year was, yeah, there's Easter and there's Christmas, and that's it. But, you know, the church for centuries used that as a yearly plan for spiritual development. And it's, if you actually study what it looks like, and what they actually did and what they were trying to teach and why. It's pretty powerful. Now, I'm not saying that we should all be liturgical churches. That definitely would not work for a lot of people, and there's no reason to do that. But John Larroquette's famous for saying that, I don't read a lot of new authors because there's so many dead guys I haven't caught up with yet. And it's, if we're looking for a way to have a spiritual plan, it's really smart to start by looking at the plan that the early church developed and seeing what they were doing and studying what they were doing and then trying to say, okay, they did this, how can I apply that? What can I learn from that? And how can we develop from there?
Interesting. So Jason, you know, John laid out some things and kind of did a little bit of the why, but why do we need a plan? Why should student ministry, kids ministry leaders start developing this plan? I mean, John laid out a couple good stats there. Some think they are, but a lot of them aren't. What would you encourage people to do?
Well, think about it this way. Quote, if it escapes me who to attribute it to right now, is that failing to plan is planning to fail. If you don't have some kind of framework in your mindset of what you're trying to accomplish and what kind of outcomes that God wants to do through you and through this ministry, then how do you know what a fruitful ministry even is in your context?
Right.
And in that case, and when you don't know what a fruitful ministry is, how are any of the decisions you're making good? How are they benefiting the kids, the parents? How are they being good stewards of the church? How do you know if anything you're doing is appropriate if you don't have a plan for what your outcome you're trying to pursue?
Right.
And so that is why. And then another thing goes back to, how do you know that you're actually investing in children if you have no plan to do it?
Yeah, right.
I mean, we may, a lot of people, and here's the thing, and it's easy to fall in this trap, Tom. It's so easy to fall in this trap. You walk into a church, join a church, and say you become a children's ministry leader. Maybe it's a church plant. Maybe it's something that it's been going for a while. It kind of doesn't matter. You get in there, and you know there is a semblance of, you know, the certain functions of the church are going to happen. You know there's going to be some form of corporate worship. If you're the children's ministry leader, there's going to be some form of children's ministry. So you start doing the children's ministry worship thing. You start recruiting volunteers. You start planning a weekend service. And before you know it, 2 years have gone by.
Uh-huh.
Because that's just kind of the life of a children's ministry leader.
Right.
So it's not like this. I don't think there are people out there crossing their arms and making an ugly face saying, I don't want a plan. But I do think that they find themselves having spent years in ministry going, I don't really know why I do any of the things I do.
Right. Yeah. Cause it is easy. I mean, I will say, I mean, I just started a new ministry position a few months ago, and I know that, you know, I jumped in and ministry was already running. It wasn't like, oh, let's wait till Tom comes and then we'll start. No, it was already going, and I had to dive into it was like jumping on a moving bus. And I had to get on. Well, I didn't exactly know where that bus was going. I had a general idea. I did my research on the church and all those kind of things, kind of knew what was important, what they valued, all of those kind of things. And every church would say, we believe in discipling children and families, and we want to help people. You know, our thing is helping people realize and reach their full potential in Christ. You know, that's an admirable goal. It's an admirable mission. But, you know, the plan isn't always crystal clear as far as when it comes to children and families, how that really happens. Most people would say, well, it's my curriculum. I chose curriculum to do that, and that's what's going to get me there or whatever. I think people make the mistake, especially a lot of young leaders make the mistake of their ministry plan is the curriculum. And that's where they stop.
I think that's a fair assessment that it can be that way. And the danger behind that is that a curriculum written for the broad audience can't possibly speak directly to your context.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reason that you go, okay, I think our church has a really good vision. And I'm all for it, but I don't see where that plan applies to children, is because it's on the children's ministry leader to adopt that. They're the ones pursuing, asking God, what kind of outcomes, how do you want this vision expressed in the ministry to kids and parents and adult and the volunteers I work with.
Yeah.
And so we don't just want to say, oh, we'll just do whatever somebody else is doing. I mean, if you read Steve Adams has got a great book on children's ministry on purpose. Mm-hmm. Well, children's ministry on purpose is an adaption of Rick Warren's purpose-driven church.
Right.
But Steve didn't just take the purpose-driven church and say, okay, and this for kids too. He actually took it, thought through it, worked through it, figured it out, and then expressed it in his unique ministry context.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what every children's ministry should be doing. And effective children's ministries do this, and they do it well. And so if you don't have a plan and you're just relying on whatever curriculum you're buying, I mean, you have nothing with which, no scope with which you can make the right decision.
Right.
So what happens with when you or your volunteers or your kids get tired of the curriculum you're using and you want to switch? Are you now switching ministry philosophy? Are you now switching ministry plans?
Mm-hmm.
Is what you thought was so important last year not important this year because we don't like this curriculum anymore?
Mm-hmm.
That can be a trap.
Right.
And so it's important. That's why it's important that you have a unique plan for your ministry based on the outcomes God's put into your heart for your unique context.
Right.
Yeah. Speaking as like people who created a curriculum, you know, your curriculum creator, you're doing a wonderful thing and a noble Christ-centered thing, but they're not thinking just about you and about your kids and your culture and your, we were just thinking about the 1 hour of content that we were creating. So Elephant actually had way more than that. It was like 3 hours of content a week. But we were just thinking about the content that we were creating and trying to make it the best that it could possibly be. But we never would have expected what we were doing to be sufficient for your entire ministry. We only ever expected it to be a tool. And I think the majority of curriculum creators would agree with that statement. Like, we're not trying to be your entire ministry. This is just a tool for 1 hour.
Right. Right. And I think one of the mistakes, like I said, it doesn't matter how long you've been in ministry. We all can get into that mode of relying on that. Because we don't have the time to write our own for our own context. And so we lean on that almost too heavily. And like I said, if you were to ask a leader, you know, well, you guys did. You asked, do you have a plan? You had a lot of people saying, well, yeah, I've got a plan. But I have a feeling, did you guys this is kind of off script a little bit, but did you guys discover that some of the people couldn't even articulate what their plan was? Did you kind of investigate a little bit of, what did people think their plan encompassed?
I don't think it would be fair to say that, because it was a survey sent out to churches, and we correlated their responses.
Okay.
So I think it would be speculation on our part to say that they were just what you're saying.
Okay.
I think it's an interesting thing to follow up and find out.
Yeah. Okay.
But I don't want to put words in the mouth of our respondents, because I feel like that we didn't ask that question.
Okay, Frank. That's fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay, so I know some people are listening, and they're feeling that struggle. They're realizing, hey, you know what? I really don't have a plan. I couldn't articulate one. If I was asked to give my elevator pitch of, if somebody asked me, what's your plan for ministry, for spiritual development in your, you know, as a whole, I have a lot of times I think people would struggle with that. So
yep.
What steps could a leader take to begin that process of spiritual development? Where are they going to start? Because I think some people get very overwhelmed with that question of, where do I start? Because there's a lot of things to look at.
And this is going to sound like the most obvious answer in the world, but that's what we firmly believe. You start with prayer.
Yes.
You start with seeking God and saying, God, what are you trying to do through this ministry at this time in this place. You know, we don't believe that God is only trying to do one thing and that everybody's kind of adapting to it. God is working in the hearts and lives of each and every person, and therefore it's unique to each and every person. So if you're in this context, where whatever town you're in, whatever culture you're in, whatever type of church you're in, all of that is built around what God's doing in that community. And so that's the first thing you're doing, is you're saying, God, what outcome, what does a child who comes through our ministry at this time in this place, what does a child that is bearing fruit look like? What is a fruitful ministry outcome? And God will reveal that to you. We're going to talk about how you can kind of see that here in a minute, but God's going to reveal that to you. And what you need to realize is, when we talk about a plan, what we're really talking about is framework. Because sometimes people create a plan and it becomes cemented like a foundation. Well, I wanted the general and president of our country, Dwight D. Eisenhower, has a quote saying that plans themselves are useless, but planning is essential. And what he meant was, knowing what you're trying to accomplish and your intent is what's important, but it may not work out the way you expect it. And then a less revered person, though famous, Mike Tyson said, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. And so what happens is, what that basically is, means your plan, if you come up with a solid, like, concrete brick wall kind of plan, that this is what we're going to do and nothing else, the first time you run into trouble, you're going to find yourself into a lot of tension. But remember, we're not trying to create a brick wall faith in the life of kids. We're trying to create a river-like faith.
Yeah.
And the beautiful thing about river-like faith is, if it has to go under, it goes under. If it has to go over, it goes over. It can go around and it can punch through, depending on what the water is doing.
That's good stuff.
And so having that framework, these are the outcomes we're pursuing. Here's how we're going to do it. And so one of the things we like to do is, we like to operate in terms of questions. And so you want to answer some very basic questions to help develop your plan.
Okay. So what would be some of those questions a leader would ask?
The first one is the overall outcome. We talked about just a minute ago. The next one is, who might we be ministering to? And as children's ministry leaders, you think, well, that's obvious. It's children. And it is. It is children. But it's also whoever else is in your orbit. Mm-hmm. So that includes the influential adults that we often call volunteers.
Right.
And it also includes the parents of those children that are in our orbit. God has put them in our orbit to minister to them. And I really want people to think about that in terms of a discipleship model. There tends to be a lot of tension about, do I disciple kids, but I don't disciple adults. So therefore I'm not going to engage with parents. I'm not going to minister to my volunteers.
Right.
But you have to understand that in many cases, you may be the closest pastor to that adult.
Right, right.
They're in your orbit. They're in your place. You have to consider them as part of your ministry. God has put them in your life.
Yes.
So don't ignore it and don't put it away.
Right.
All right. So that's who might you minister to. The next question is, who might you minister through? And that's what we like to call channels. I've often referred to children's ministry as a three-legged stool. There's a children, parents, and influential adults, which we often call volunteers. If you don't have balance between those three, your stool doesn't stand up well.
Right.
And so basically, when you're thinking about how you're ministering to people, especially what we're looking at today with church attendance coming down to once every other week, and in that very same survey we showed you, overwhelmingly, regardless of denomination, regardless of size, regardless of location, churches said the average attendance of our church is 1 hour twice a month. That's it.
Yeah.
So right. Anybody who says, well, no, it's not that way, that's only, those are not outliers. That's now the norm.
Right.
So knowing that, you got to ask yourself, when I'm ministering through people, you're thinking about, where are the people I'm trying to reach, putting their time, and how do I maximize that time? So let's take, for example, a child. Most children's ministry leaders would say, yes, I'm supposed to minister to a child. Well, a child may be with you on average if you look at those statistics, half an hour a week, right? Mm-hmm. Doesn't look like that. It looks like that maybe 1 hour every other week, but it's on average half an hour a week.
Right.
So when you think about that, you go, okay, so for an average of half an hour a week, I have direct interaction with a child. So that's one of the questions. That's one channel.
Yep.
I'm ministering to the child directly, me to the child for half, twice a month for an hour. So that's one channel. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then you got to say, okay, so who else is interacting with that child and when? So if you have volunteers interacting with that child, even if it's during that hour, you've got to figure out how am I ministering to through that volunteer? How is what that volunteer doing pushing that, moving that child toward our outcomes? All right. So a lot of times when we have a plan, we know what kind of teaching we want to do. And that's where the curriculum comes into play. And you start thinking, I want this influential adult teaching these things to my children, moving them toward this outcome. Mm-hmm. The third place there you got to ask yourself is where else are the children spending their time? And if you look at statistics, which we looked at the Bureau of Labor Statistics from last year, average parents spend 7 hours a week directly interacting and caring for their children.
Wow.
Right? So that's around an hour a day taking care of their child's needs and directly interacting with them. Mm-hmm. This is children under 18. So obviously more with younger children, less with older children, but it's on average an hour. If that's the case, then you need to be encouraging and equipping and mentoring parents to have a discipleship plan for their children. Because in doing so, you're maximizing the time that you are ministering to those children.
Yeah. And you know, I don't mean to interrupt, but I think that's a great point for leaders that are struggling with the whole thing of, do I minister to kids or do I minister to students? If they would view that time as, if I can invest in parents and help them understand the resources that are available to understand how they can leverage the time they have, you've just multiplied your Sunday influence.
Correct.
Right?
Exactly. Because I think sometimes we get this notion, and I don't want to say anything more than just what it is. We think that if it's not me ministering directly to the child, it goes outside of my responsibility. Hmm. And my question is, well, you know, are you making the most of the time God's given you? If you think it just has to be your interaction with the child, or might it be possible that your influence in the lives of everyone in that child's life might maximize that time? That's something to think about. And this could even go,
it is.
You could expand this even further if you wanted to and say, is it valuable to me to spend some of my week in a school where a lot of my children are, and helping that school move toward a direction that's incongruent with my outcomes? That might be a way. And that's just one example.
Right.
We could keep going. But that's one of the things is, like, you need to, for your framework, identify the channels in which you're going to operate.
Right.
That's what's important.
Yep.
And that three-legged stool is pretty much constant. It's pretty much a constant. Beyond that, it's kind of wherever you want to go. But what I do want to encourage you to do is to put boundaries on your channels. That's very important. Uh-huh. And, you know, we talked about this in a previous podcast, Tom, but we did this thing where we talked about how much time children's ministry leaders spent planning their weekend.
Right. Yep.
And how much they thought that parents were the primary disciples of their kids, and the disconnect there.
Right. There was a big disconnect.
Right. And some of the pushback that we got was, well, I can't just abandon my weekend. And I'm like, no one is saying that.
Right, right.
No one's ever espousing that you stop planning to minister to your children on the weekend when we gather together for worship. No one would ever espouse that. But you do need to put boundaries on it and say, how much time do I need to invest in this channel so that I have time to invest in other channels? And I'm not going to say they're equal, because that's not fair.
Right, yeah.
No, it's got to be in your context. You've got to figure it out. So you've got to put those boundaries. But the boundaries are important for two reasons. One, it keeps you from not ignoring other things that are important to your framework. But two, it also enhances your creativity. Mm. And so you want those boundaries to help enhance your creativity. What's the quote, John, from Dennis? We had a mentor that had a quote.
Yeah, we used to always hear this quote from Dennis when we were talking about creativity. He would say, "You're not truly creative until you run out of options."
Yeah. And
like,
yeah,
that's creatable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It totally is. And, you know, as long as you have, you know, options and plans and plan B and plan C and plan D already laid out, you're just going to follow the checklist. You're not even necessarily thinking. But once you, like, all of those plans are negated or all of those options are negated, now you have to actually think about, oh, well, now what am I going to do? Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so you kind of come back to, how do you know what boundaries are? And so one of the things that we play around with is what we're doing meaningful and memorable? Mm-hmm. Because there's a certain amount of investment where after you reach a certain point of investing in a channel, you won't get a return for it.
Right.
For instance, this is a totally an example. It's certainly not me knowing exactly how you operate, but Tom, let's say you spent 35 hours of your 40 plus hour week planning this 10 minute object lesson, for example. Mm-hmm. Eventually, you're not going to make that object lesson any better.
Right.
You're not going to hit a point where the kids are going to go, aha. You may have hit the point where you did effective teaching in, say, 2 hours. And so the other 33 hours are basically wasted effort.
Yeah.
Because you can only go so good. You can only be so effective. No matter how wow you get, and you can get pretty wow. And I know we've been part of some.
I was gonna say, you guys have done some pretty wow stuff.
We've been part of some pretty big situations of doing some pretty wow things. But in the end, the child is still only there for an hour.
Right.
You're only going to impact them so much before it's just going to be lost. Yeah. So the question you need to ask yourself is, have I got it to where what I'm trying to accomplish is meaningful and memorable? And if you've accomplished that, I think it's a good boundary to say, okay, now it's time to move to another channel and let's see how I do that.
Yeah. It's not about not having any wow or like saying you shouldn't have any, you know, flashy, cool, fun, wow elements. Mm-hmm. It's about not allowing pursuing the wow to take more of your resource, which is your time,
right,
than is appropriate.
Yeah.
Think about it like a budget, like spending money. You don't want to spend an inordinate amount of your money on some flashy thing that is not actually adding value to, you know, what it is.
Oh, that's good. It's so good and it's so true, John. And I'll throw the sacred cow on the grill. VBS. I mean, VBS has become a huge business in church world now. And I think about sometimes the thousands of man hours and the thousands of dollars that are spent for basically what, 10 hours, 15 hours. I mean, one week of a child's life for what? When most leaders would admit, if they're truly honest, and I know people are going to argue, but that's okay. Go ahead. I'm a big boy. I'll take it. We're basically babysitting other church kids because most stats show Bible schools aren't reaching kids who are outside of the church, or if they are, they're there for that 1 week of flash and bang and boom, and then they don't come back. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm not saying throw it out. I'm not saying, you know, burn the sacred cow on the grill. I'm just saying we need to evaluate and measure, is this really worth it? Or do we put all our eggs? Because a lot of people put all their eggs in that basket. That's the one thing all year long they're going for. And if we're looking at a whole developmental plan spiritually, that might be one piece of it. But let's keep it in perspective. And let's make sure it's the right, we're putting it in the right place with the right budget, and budget it, really. I think we don't budget that time or resource appropriately. So anyway, that's another podcast. We can
do a whole other thing on that, because we've been a part of building up an incredibly amazing VBS experience, and then deciding as a ministry that it wasn't doing the outcome that we wanted, and we discontinued it, and then we brought it back later. So we could have a whole
We could talk about,
and it would be a great podcast to rethink VBS, because I've done that same thing. I changed in my last church. We went to a whole different model for VBS, and I honestly would never go back, I don't think, unless the Lord showed me that the new model, a different model was more appropriate in my context.
Well, that's the kind of thing is that's, and what you're kind of getting at, Tom, is kind of the whole point we're talking about. If you have a framework for what your outcome you're looking for, and VBS fits that framework, that's the reason to do it.
Yes.
Not some external, do we grow in attendance? Do we do this? No.
Yeah.
When you're sitting down with your senior leadership, you're saying, this is why this is important, because we're trying to produce this outcome and this particular intensive, which that's what we like to call the camp VBS, summer backpack class, summer intensive. This intense week actually helps accomplish that.
Right.
Now your VBS takes on a point. If you're looking at your framework and you say, we're trying to do these things, but this VBS now suddenly becomes an outlier, something that really doesn't push us toward that direction, then maybe you go, okay, we need to stop doing that.
Right.
Because it doesn't fit our context.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's what takes some effort here is making sure your leadership is supportive of what you're trying to accomplish. Mm-hmm. Because what happens is you want to make sure that you as a leader and your senior leader are on the same page on what you're being graded on. There's a story out of a book called The Startup Way that Eric Ries wrote that I read recently, where he was helping a large company figure out how to be more like a startup. And they had this great idea that was going to save a lot of money, that was going to help them test some ideas, it was going to be great. And so he kept asking the team, are we ready to move forward? And they said, no. He said, but don't you agree this is going to save us a lot of money, this is going to be better for the company? Absolutely. He goes, so should we move forward with it? They said, no. And he said, why? And the reason was, it would hurt their incentives as employees of what the company was grading them on. So their promotions, their raises, all that stuff, the things they were doing with this new idea would actually hurt those things. And so if your senior leader is saying, I'm grading how good a leader you are based on how well you do your VBS, it's going to be hard to cut a VBS.
Right.
Because now you're thinking, okay, or how well you do your weekend, it's going to be hard to less your effort on your weekend. So it's important when you come up with a plan and you talk about your outcomes that your senior leader is walking with you on that. Whoever's the one that's measuring your leadership, so they understand where you're trying to go and what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
You have to ask those, like a lot of people talk about that question. I can't remember who said that it was like the question or the statement of a dying church is like, we've never done it that way before.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But I think the statement of a dying ministry can also be, we've never not done it that way before.
Ooh. Well, he's been full of tweetable quotes today, John Jason.
He's full of tweetable quotes all the time. You should follow him on Twitter.
I think you should. I think you should subscribe to his blog.
Follow him and the part form. Follow them both.
But
and that's important. It's important that they know what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah. So that leads us to really our kind of our final question to kind of wrap this discussion up to start this series is, so then what do you measure? How do you measure?
I'll tell you what you don't measure.
Okay.
You stop measuring attendance.
Woo! Everybody cheer. Everybody say amen.
Stop measuring attendance. Now, again, that's easy for you to say. That's easy for me. That's really easy for me to say. I'm not in a church right now. So, I mean, I'm not on staff at a church. So I don't want to say I'm not in church. I serve every weekend. But like, I don't have any, me saying don't measure attendance doesn't, no one's coming after me for that. But truthfully, the more we measure attendance, the less fruitful we're going to be, because we're basically, it's like taking a bucket and saying, I'm going to bail out the ocean.
Yeah.
It's not a good way to do it.
No, it's not.
It's just not effective. So don't measure attendance, because that's not going to work. One of the things we're part of a project with One Hope a couple years back called Incredible Islands. We were developing a online virtual world, and where kids could spend time studying God's word, applying it, praying, building relationships. And it's kind of like a way we were looking to have investing kids in the time when they weren't in church, so that when they were in church, it was even more fruitful. Because you can't replace face-to-face connection with technology. It doesn't work. One of the things we were trying to help churches understand is measure engagement. Measure how much time your kids are spending on this platform, because that counts. It's the same as if they were spending time in a discipleship class. But the problem is, too many churches stay on that attendance thing. Like, we have to have attendance. And I'm like, it's not an effective method. What I'm starting to look for is what I call bright spots or touch points, things where we're seeing those outcomes occurring. And one of the ways I look at it is time.
Yeah.
A big deal. And it's not time in your church. It's just time in God's word and in prayer and in building relationships. Mm-hmm. And if you can find a way to measure that, both whether they're attending your services, what they're doing in home, what they're doing in their work, in their week at school, if you can find ways to measure what time is spent doing those things, that to me is a fruitful measurement. That's one for me.
And it's really just as easy as just asking them, right? I mean, that's all you got to do is just ask, hey, are you doing this? And keep track of it. See how many respond.
Yeah. And you can do some things like gamify it. You could have a contest where you're going to give away a prize, and you have certain Bible passages and certain Bible verses and certain things that you do, that if they're doing it at home and they're coming in and they're being able to get your prize, then wow. Okay, so now you can measure they're spending time doing it. So there's ways you can do that. And I don't want to say bribe them to read their Bible, but it does help encourage them to participate.
Yeah. I want to back up just a little bit. And when you're talking about time and not measuring attendance, but measuring time, you do, like, your person showing up to a church service, you do count that, but you don't count it as a person showing up to your church service. You count it as 1 hour of engagement.
Mm-hmm.
And then when that same person shows up to a small group, that's an hour and a half small group, you count it as an hour and a half of engagement. You know, and start thinking about the amount of time that people are spending being engaged in content, being engaged in the Bible, being engaged in serving others. You know, if you have a big serve project and you know that, you know, your volunteers spent 5 hours on a Saturday doing projects and serving your community, measure that time. So in a way, you're still measuring attendance, but you've got to think about it differently.
That's good.
It's not a success to fill your, stop thinking about success as filling your auditorium and start thinking about success as pouring the Bible into the time of your, into the time that people live their lives.
Right. Right. Well, and really then to me, another natural measuring point then is, are they taking next steps? And that is something you can measure. You can see that, just like you said, are they engaging in a small group? Have they been baptized? Are they serving in a project? Have they gone on a missions trip?
Yes.
Are they involved in community service? I think we start looking at those kind of things. Those are measurables. We can see it. We can know that people are doing it, and there are plenty of ways to track it. Even most church database systems, you can track that kind of stuff. And so you can see that, hey, we're making progress. We've got X number of people involved in small groups now. We've got X number of people coming out to missions projects, X number of people that are have brought somebody with them to church. So mm-hmm. they're avidly talking about it. They must be sharing their faith because they've invited somebody to come and experience it with them. So we can see those kind of things.
Yeah, I kind of want John to talk about it because really this is where I heard it was from him. But kind of what you're saying, Tom, there with the next steps, what we're talking about with time, it's how a lot of our culture is measuring engagement these days.
Yeah.
Whether it's and John could talk about it better, but like time spent reading stories or clicks when you read through something and you click through to the next thing, that's taking a next step. But what was it you were saying?
I mean, everybody in like digital marketing business world, what they want from you is engagement, right? What they want from you, that's the term, you know, that we talk about is engagement. And what that means is, you know, you looked at you saw our tweets, you looked at our Facebook page, you clicked on our links that were in the emails that we sent you. And everyone is wanting to measure those types of things. At every point in any, you know, digital marketing relationship, they are measuring your engagement. In fact, I mean, we had the whole like Cambridge Analytica like scandal about how scared we were about how much they were measuring. But our friend Stephen Dilla had the smartest thing that was said about that. When that scandal was breaking, he tweeted, "Breaking news: people figure out how Facebook works." It shouldn't be a mystery that we're giving all that data to Facebook. We're willingly giving it to them. You know, Facebook's measures their success by how long you spend on Facebook looking at it. Yeah. They don't care what you're looking at. They just want you to be looking at it on Facebook. We want to be a little more purposeful than that, but mm-hmm. we should be measuring our success by how much time people are spending engaged in scripture, in prayer, and in serving the community. And we shouldn't really... You know, like Jason was saying, digital interaction does not replace face to face. So yes, it's and being at your church and talking to real people and shaking hands and talking to them, and that is very, very vitally important. But it's not the only way that we can engage them. And if it is the only way, then we are just surrendering the rest of their life to nothing.
Mm.
Wow, that's good. That's so good. Well, fellas, we're going to have to, unfortunately, wrap up. And obviously, folks, if you've been listening and engaged, you're going to see why. We're going to continue a series like this, and we're going to continue to build on this idea of how do we create that development plan. And we want to help you. And if this is something that's interesting to you, I know John and Jason and I are all willing to dive in with you. This is what John and Jason do. In particular, I do it with my coaching ministry as well, and we partner together. So the three of us would be glad to dive in with anybody. So fellas, how can they contact you if they want to dive in a little bit more on this subject? How can they reach out to you guys?
Our main website is ministryaccelerator.org or .com, ministryaccelerator.com. And our emails are jason@ministryaccelerator.org or john@ministryaccelerator.org. Very simple.
Yeah. And Twitter is one of our main other places that we're engaging. And if you want to follow Ministry Accelerator on Twitter, it is @MINAccelerator on Twitter. And then Jason is Jason L. Tilley on Twitter. And I'm J. Till Human.
Okay. And John's a much better Twitterer than I, so don't, like, I tend to, yeah, I'm not as good at the Twitter.
Yeah, and if you want to follow, my devotional blog, The Park Forum, it is @ThePark Forum on Twitter and on Instagram, and of course, there's a Facebook page, too, and everything.
And we recently, if you look on our website, we recently did a post about how valuable The Park Forum can be to equip your volunteers for spiritual development, or your parents. If you want to equip them just to have their own quiet time, this is a great way to do it.
Yes.
Without you write anything.
Well, guys, thanks so much, and I'm looking forward to continuing this series. We've got some other topics that we're going to wrestle with, and we've got other people that are going to join us in this conversation. Always good to get more voices in. And again, thanks for your time, fellas. Appreciate it today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Kid Ministry Collective Podcast. We hope you've been informed, encouraged, and entertained for these few moments. We'd love for you to connect with us on our Kid Ministry Collective Facebook group or subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. It'd also mean a lot if you'd leave a review so we can help others learn about this podcast. If you want, you can watch this episode on video on our Kids Ministry Collective YouTube page. Our goal of the KMC is from Proverbs 27:17, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Join us again soon for another KMC podcast.